and welcome to Week in Review, your weekly roundup of news and analysis from OnFIF around the world. I'm Julie Levy-Abignoli. Today, we're talking about what's next for dollar liquidity, why the euro needs monetary finance, and the pandemic's effect on climate change. We'll also cover corona bonds and US-China tension. All that and more coming right up. And welcome to this edition of Week in Review. There is no doubt in anyone's mind of the dollar's status as top dog among currencies, a status it has forcefully reasserted throughout the pandemic shock, as OnFIF economist Pierre Ortlieb wrote earlier this week. Given the currency's strength, dollar liquidity has been tight globally. Policy responses aimed at easing this tightness have so far achieved modest results, leaving open questions about the medium-term future of the US currency. So what's next for global dollar liquidity? The Federal Reserve's rollout of new swap lines and a temporary repurchase agreement facility for foreign and international monetary authorities, known as FEMA, has provided some respite to global supply chains heavily reliant on dollars. Take-up of the swap lines has been unprecedented, while the first FEMA figure, released on the 9th of April, was slightly underwhelming as operational scale-up gets underway. The New York Fed's measure of custody holdings for foreign official accounts has dropped at the fastest pace ever, shedding more than $100 billion in a handful of weeks and still falling. This should help partly stem the tide for Asian currencies dropping against the dollar in recent weeks. Make no mistake, though, at this moment, global dollar liquidity is still tight. It might appear that cross-currency bases, a measure of the premium paid for global dollar liquidity, referred to by the Bank for International Settlements as the shadow price of bank balance sheets, have returned to previous levels since their March widening. The yen basis, for example, is even positive, suggesting a relative oversupply of dollars to the euro area. In some cases, as in Japan, the central bank has provided so much foreign currency liquidity to the banking system that it has inadvertently tightened financial conditions in domestic currency. This is misleading. The cross-currency bases that have narrowed are those based on a swap of London interbank offered rates. Their narrowing is based on a widening in the LIBOR overnight indexed swap spread, which itself has come apart for idiosyncratic reasons largely unrelated to global liquidity conditions. For one, there are grave composition issues with LIBOR, producing pricing uncertainty. Similarly, a slow rollout in Fed money market facilities has contributed to the widening. As such, the recent improvement in global liquidity conditions is a mirage based solely on the tightening of one of the money market rates that goes into the calculation of cross-currency bases. The basis swap of OIS measures, rather than LIBOR, illustrates how tight liquidity conditions still remain. Meghnad Desai, chair of the OnFIF Advisory Council, wrote about why the euro needs monetary finance. Meghnad wrote, "Orthodox finance ends in wartime. One important victim of COVID-19 may be the Maastricht Treaty that set up monetary union in Europe. The economic cultures of Europe's Protestant North and Catholic South remain poles apart. 3 decades ago, the joint objective of building a single currency established, for a while, a unity of responsibility and rectitude. The pandemic threatens to tear it apart. The North, on the whole, is frugal, fiscally conservative, suspicious of debt and deficits, and leans toward fixed exchange rates. The South is relaxed about monetary discipline, habitually enjoys depreciating currencies, and can cope with inflation. For a time, North and South can live together. Perhaps not forever. Divisions over pandemic-fighting corona bonds run along these entrenched cultural lines. Italian disappointment about perceived shortfalls in northern generosity echoes much previous southern frustration over burden sharing on immigration, interest rates, and debts. Ever creative, the European Central Bank is bending the rules. Northerners are alarmed at the South's successful emotional blackmail and the unraveling of sound finance. Both North and South end up dissatisfied. In the clash between northern rules and southern indulgence, economic sense favors the South. Advances towards monetary financing, together with risk pooling through corona bonds, would lower the cost of crisis measures and raise their effectiveness. The bonds can be structured to preserve as much fiscal rectitude as feasible. The costs of inaction are incalculable. Lives, incomes, and possible euro breakup. European policymakers should weigh up what they dislike least and then act. Wherever you are, you've probably noticed fewer cars on the road, and the air you breathe might even feel cleaner. As Gary Smith, Managing Director of Sovereign Focus, wrote, Greta Thunberg couldn't do it, and neither could the Paris Climate Accord. But COVID-19 has led to a dramatic decline in greenhouse gas emissions as travel and general economic activity slow sharply in much of the world. After a small pause in 2009, carbon emissions for the year 2020 will show their first significant decline since modern records began. However, tackling the climate emergency in a durable way will not come from shutting down the economy as coronavirus has done. It will come only from restructuring the economy to encourage a low-carbon alternative. The argument that the economic catastrophe is good for the climate is misleading, as it could weaken political enthusiasm and government funding for climate action. Coal-dependent nations in Eastern Europe are already calling for the ambitions of the recently announced European Green Deal to be scaled back. European car producers are asking for carbon emission targets to be pushed back, and airlines are asking for financial bailouts. The dilemma on whether the crisis is a threat or an opportunity for the climate change agenda is captured by the oil price. Governments will need to intervene and ensure that the availability of cheaper fossil fuels does not slow the transition to a low-carbon transport infrastructure. Nations should use the opportunity presented by the weaker oil price to remove historic fuel subsidies or adjust tax regimes. Governments will also need to find a way to ensure that the switch to clean energy technologies, such as solar panels and wind turbines, is not derailed by the lockdown in many parts of China, a key producer. Governments should be bold and launch stimulus packages that are focused on clean energy technologies. The prospect of corporate profits plummeting will test the level of individual company commitment to climate issues. Management will have to decide if climate focus was a luxury item for the peak of the profit cycle or the genuine beginning of a new investment agenda. Our greenwashing antenna will need to be attuned. It is possible that investors start to put more value on long-run resilience rather than short-run profits, but the asset management industry will have to play a role in explaining this to investors. The United Nations Climate Change Conference, scheduled to take place in Glasgow in October, has been delayed to 2021 for social distancing reasons. This might have a silver lining if a new US president allows the US to retake its seat at the table. But 2020 will still be a key year for political action on climate change, as all 192 nations that have signed the Paris Agreement are due to publish updated nationally determined contributions on how they are progressing on limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels. Policymakers around the globe should renew their commitment to that goal with vigor and ensure that 2020 is not merely a blip in our global carbon emissions history. We need the recovery to be a green one. Our Chief Executive Officer, John Orchard, touched on climate action in his conversation with Ayla Cravey, Director and Head of the Capital Markets Department at the European Investment Bank, and Rolf Wenzel, Governor of the Council of Europe Development Bank, together with Frank Steidig and Markus Pratt of DZ Bank. Against the backdrop of extraordinary measures, bringing forth considerable new government borrowing and gigantic volumes of central bank bond buying, the EIB and CEB raised 1 billion euros each last week with slightly negatively yielding bonds that met record-breaking demand. Nevertheless, will the issuance glut render the sovereign, super-sovereign, and agency market disorderly? What will happen to ratings and therefore pricing? How do capital markets work from home? And will corona bonds crowd out sustainability bonds, or are they the same? You can listen to a recording of their conversation, or read the full transcript if you prefer, on omfif.org. On our website, you will also find a recording and transcript of a call between our chairman, David Marsh, and Kishore Mahubani, Distinguished Fellow at the Asia Research Institute, professor at the National University of Singapore, and a former Singaporean diplomat. They discuss US-China tension, how each side is responding to financial shocks, and the pandemic's impact on the global economy. This week, we had several new additions to our podcast channel. Meghna Desai, who I mentioned earlier, joined James Crabtree, Associate Professor at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy, and our very own Brandon Chai to discuss the Indian financial system and its capacity to handle the economic fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic. And David Dollar, former US Treasury and World Bank representative in Beijing and one of the world's leading China experts, joined Mark Sobel, US Chairman of UMFIF, to discuss Chinese economic developments. Looking ahead to next week, we have another full slate of virtual meetings. On Monday, 20th of April, Fernanda Netchio, Deputy Governor of the Banco Central de Brasil, discusses Brazil's economic situation, the central bank's policy responses, and its assessment of global developments. The next day, Sean Hagen, Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics and former General Counsel and Director of the Legal Department at the International Monetary Fund, will talk about what emerging markets can do to avoid a sovereign debt crisis. On Thursday, 23rd of April, Mario Nava, Director of Horizontal Policies at the European Commission, discusses the policies at euro area members' disposal to tackle the healthcare and economic consequences of the pandemic. Finally, on Friday, 24th of April, Fabio Natalucci, Deputy Director of the Monetary and Capital Markets Department at the IMF, discusses the Fund's Global Financial Stability Report and its outlook for the global economy. And that is all for this edition of Week in Review. To read more about everything we've discussed, visit umfif.org or scroll down to the show notes underneath this podcast, where you will find links to everything mentioned today. If you wish to stay up to date with UMFIF news, analysis, and forthcoming meetings, sign up at umfif.org/subscribe. I'm Julie Leviette-Vignoli. Thank you for listening.